I'm Chris Retz.
I'm Jack Mottman.
And this is Three Blind Drinks.
We're going to drink three whiskeys.
And those whiskeys have been blinded for us, meaning they've been put in different bottles without any markings. So we don't know what they are.
We're going to take 15 minutes on each whiskey. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get to know each other with our special guest,
who is this time... Matt Ford.
Hello, Jack, Chris. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks
for having us.
Yeah, thanks. And why do you say thanks for having us, Jack?
We are sitting in Matt's living room.
Yes, we are.
It's quite beautiful.
Thanks. I love this house.
It's delightful. So we are, so let's set the scene a little bit. We are in South Pasadena in a beautiful... every time I'm in Pasadena and I see one of these amazing houses, I want to call it a bungalow. Mm.
Is that right?
I have no idea if that's technically correct.
I think sort of. It's the house was built in 1919.
Whoa.
It's a craftsman style house. Mm-hmm. I think the arts and crafts style is where that comes from. Mm-hmm. I've been doing a little bit of research on this, actually. Yeah. Green and Green, who did the Gamble House.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They kind of like made that style very popular here.
Okay.
At least that's my understanding. I could be completely wrong. So if your listeners know any better, I apologize.
So whenever someone says the Gamble House, I immediately think of Back to the Future.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Doc Brown's house.
Right. Yeah. Which, absolutely. I mean, come on. That's great.
All right. Let's pour our first whiskey.
Yeah. Let's pour it. Let's get it. Okie doke.
Okay.
All right. We've got whiskey number one.
Whiskey number one has been poured.
What do you guys smell? So last Ooh. Week, I totally was like, oh, it's absolutely a bourbon, and it was Redbreast. Mm. So it was close-ish.
Yeah, that's fair.
But it's not at all, so I feel like I'm not...
I feel like this is a bourbon.
This has to be a bourbon, right?
It's got
to
be. It's super... I get kind of caramelly-ish.
Yeah.
Ooh. Now, I feel like I've asked Jack this question so many times that it's probably unwise for me to ask again. But since you're saying the same thing, it's probably a bourbon. When you say that,
yeah,
what is it you're picking up on that says bourbon to you?
Well, it smells like I feel like it's going to be sweet.
Yeah.
Like it's got and bourbon is generally a sweeter spirit.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah.
Is that the right word?
It smells sweet. It's like brown sugar. It's kind of got that like going on.
I want to drink it is
go
what I want to do.
Yeah, go for it. I am also, I'm doing the patented Jack smell, which I call it that because...
Because I told you about it?
Yes, exactly. my entire life, I've been sniffing alcoholic, like wine and whiskey and such things with my mouth closed.
Ooh, yeah, you have to have it open.
Like a fool. Yeah, like an amateur. And Jack is the one who taught me to leave my mouth open. What do you guys think about spice?
Is it spicy to you?
And by spice, I don't mean like the jalapeno spice, but like maybe the Christmassy kind of like wine spice.
Did you taste it, Matt?
Not yet.
Oh, I'm very curious to hear what you guys think of the taste.
Okay.
To me, it's like kind of the smell and the taste don't go together.
Oh.
So my wife does this part where she... takes them from the real bottles and puts them in these like IKEA bottles. Mm. And so she's in the kitchen and I'm in the other room and she's like, don't come in here. Don't come in here. And then I hear, I might need you to come in here. One of these, I don't know which one, she like couldn't figure out how to pour out of. Like it was very odd. I came in and I was like, I don't know what's going on. This doesn't make any sense to me.
Wow.
So that'll
some sort of like contraption at the top of the bottle.
It didn't make sense.
Okay. Mm. So Jack, I could not agree with you more. I feel like I'm going to use weird terminology here hot and cold.
Hot and cold.
So like when I sniffed it, maybe because of the spices, there's something very like kind of warm and cozy about the smell, and the taste really subverts that in my opinion. Mm. Just like kind of smacks you in the mouth a little bit.
Yeah. Like a couple a year ago or so, somebody got me these aging staves that you like put into a bottle to like age it more. Like it's oak staves that you just put in the bottle. So I bought White Dog from Buffalo Trace.
Right.
And I dropped one in. And then I was really rigorous about tasting it every day to see like how it changed. And there was this thing that I called raw green vegetables.
Okay.
Like if you know, you like smell like an asparagus or like, or like it's just starting to cook and you can just, there's that certain kind of smell like green beans. I get that in this whiskey.
Really?
This sort of like green, I call it green new, but those aren't tastes. Those are just words.
It's really funny that, I don't know if you guys feel this, but when you say something, you smell it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So
Chris is highly suggestible.
I'm basically useless because as soon as anyone says anything, I'm like, yep, that's it. That's exactly what, that's exactly what's in there. I've heard the term grass thrown around sometimes in relation to whiskey. I wonder if that has some relation to what you're talking about.
I would say for me, and I would agree that, I would say that I'm similar to Chris. I think I'm a little bit suggestible, but it smells different now after tasting it.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm. Yeah.
So Matt, how did you come to whiskey, or did whiskey come to you, or like, I know that you love whiskey. You're my friend.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did that happen?
Am I allowed to be embarrassed by this a little bit?
You can be whatever you want to be.
So
I don't
remember,
want to embarrass you.
I think it's, you know how, I don't know if you guys can relate to this story, but your palate just changes as you get a little bit older.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
So like when you first start drinking, you know, for me it was, I didn't even really like beer at first. I was very late to the game. I didn't drink in high school. A pretty good kid.
Same. We've talked about
so,
it.
So I, 21, when I was actually living in England and when I first started drinking beer, and I eventually started liking beer, but then someone introduced me to rum, and then I was drinking rum and I didn't really like that because it eventually got too sweet for me. But then someone introduced me to Jameson whiskey, which I feel like is kind of like the gateway drug to whiskey. It's pretty, it's mild, it's easy to drink. It's, and then you throw up on it once and you're like, wow,
you're
don't ever want to drink that again.
Totally.
So, I mean, I learned my lesson the hard way. Like when you're first learning how to drink, it's like, you don't know how to moderate appropriately, especially with whiskey. Cause it'll come back. Like, it'll just kick your butt.
Yeah. It's very sneaky.
Can I say ass on this? It'll kick your ass.
It will kick your ass.
So that's how I was introduced, but I've learned to like whiskey by drinking Jameson, and then eventually started drinking bourbons, and then took me a while to get to scotch. But once I started drinking scotch, then like it's a whole different world.
Yeah, it is.
So, but yeah, I don't know if that helps.
Oh yeah, it does. It makes,
it's great.
I like that Jameson was your entry because it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Like if you're going to start on whiskey and someone's going to hand you something, it's easily accessible. You can get it everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's always at a bar and it's not hard to drink. Even with ice, it's good. Like it's good in any way you want it.
Totally.
But it's night. Like it's an easily drinkable.
I agree.
One of the reasons why it's dangerous, right? Because you're just like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
Especially if you start out with beer and you're like, oh, you could chug a beer.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then they hand you this little thing of whiskey and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And toss one of these back.
Especially when you're, because I didn't have the palate for it right away either. So I was mixing it either with like some type of soda, like,
yeah.
It was like a Jameson and Coke or a Jameson and ginger ale. And you're just like, wow, this is easy.
Yeah.
This is so good to drink.
Yeah.
It's a lot really like is. Drinking Coke.
Yeah. Yeah. So then
this
the next,
Coke tastes like Coke.
And then the next thing you know, you're just plastered. Like, that was, what have I done?
Yeah.
So Matt, was your first beer room temperature?
Pretty close. Because I had it in England. So I think I drank I want to say it was like a room temperature Foster's.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I heard about Foster's?
What's that?
It's Australian for beer.
I've heard that as well.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
We must be talking to the same people.
Must be.
I haven't been able to independently confirm that that's the case, but I also have heard that.
I went to Australia as a small child-ish right before high school and
got drunk on Foster's.
No, I didn't. But I just remember the people we were with being like, Foster's is terrible.
Like, yes, I've heard.
They like, I think it's like three or four X's, and I think it's called Triple X or
yeah,
something.
Who
like
did
that.
I? Who did I? I recently had this conversation with someone,
Australian?
I was watching a show, maybe, and they were interviewing an Australian or something, and the person interviewing. The Australian person knew that Australians didn't like Foster's enough to like mention it in the interview. And then the person they were interviewing indeed confirmed, like, yes, if you're from Australia, you don't actually like Foster's, which was kind of shocking.
That's right.
That's a good marketing campaign. We all remembered it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense that you weren't like, oh, hey, alcohol is great. If that was like your first, you know, your first thing was a kind of a lukewarm
Foster's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Australian beer that Australians don't even like in England.
Yeah. That's very true.
That's crazy.
I still think this is a bourbon.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
Do you guys?
Because of the sweetness.
I could not tell you where from. I'm not, my palate is not
sophisticated. It seems like a young bourbon to me. Like, I think that because of my experience with that trying to age that white dog thing, that young sort of. And I know some people don't like that note when they talk about tasting notes. They hate the term young. Mm. But because of I associate it with that white dog, I think new green, and that makes me think it's a young bourbon. It might be bottled in bond. I don't know. Like, that just means...
Is young kind of like a way of saying, like, you kind of... You feel like you're tasting something pretty close to, like, the implements that went into... As opposed to like developing some sort of strange, like complex flavors, you're tasting something that's closer to kind of just like what went into the barrel, right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly. Yeah, that's a really great way of saying it.
Interesting. Let's talk about complexity. What do you guys think about the complexity of this?
I drank it all.
Super complex.
But yes, but sometimes that's an indicator, right? Because
it's easy to drink.
Yeah, right.
Do you think this was complex?
No.
I don't think it was complex at all.
No.
Agreed.
I felt like there was not a lot going on.
I mean, it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, I think
it
might be high proof, or at least higher than 40. And maybe it would be nice, like, with a ginger ale, like, mix it up. But I don't.
Yeah.
I'll say in that way, it kind of reminds me of, Jameson is stuck in my head. Bushmill, the Bush that we had last
the
night,
Bush.
Kind of like the straight forward one. And I would say between the two, I prefer this a little bit more because it just feels a little bit smoother. But I agree, like those two, like I wouldn't be surprised if this ended up being something that was like kind of the straight normal version of some line of whiskeys.
Right. Like the base, if you will.
The base. That's what I was looking for. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, totally. But it's good. I like it very much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd drink this.
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, Mike, I mean, we're really belaboring the point, but I feel like it's, to me, it feels like, you know, $20 bottle of something.
But a good $20 bottle.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it could be, it doesn't feel super high proof, so it could be something as simple as like a Jim Beam. But Jim Beam, actually, no, it's not Jim Beam.
No, it's not Jim Beam.
It's not Jim Beam.
It's got more going on than Jim Beam.
It does. Anyway, I'm not going to take any more guesses because I'm going to fail.
I say Wild Turkey every time, so I'm going, Wild Turkey.
Wild Turkey it is. Oh, speaking of, maybe it's time then to find a name.
Oh, yeah. We name each one.
For whiskey number one.
We like, instead of whiskey number one, because that's boring.
Okay.
Is there a prevalent flavor note for anyone aside from just whiskey? I mean, Jack, you mentioned green.
Yeah.
I mean, what about calling it the Deceiver?
Ooh.
Because it was like, it smelled a certain way, and then it tasted a completely
And then
different.
The smell changed.
Yeah, it did.
So it's like, you've been tricked once.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
You're going to get tricked again.
What about the double trickster?
Fool me
these
once.
Names always get so long.
Fool me once, you can't get fooled again. The George Bush.
No.
The W.
I like the deceiver.
Okay.
But done. We can go long and obnoxious if you guys want it to be that.
I love the deceiver. The very first screenplay I ever got paid a minuscule amount of money to write was a female-driven thriller that was supposed to be on Lifetime, never got on there, called The Deceiver.
So The Deceiver it is.
I love it. I wish I had had a little taster of this when I had typed the end on that screen.
Like, wait a minute. I've been deceived.
It's perfect. It's perfect. All right, The Deceiver. I love it.
You guys ready for whiskey number two?
Let's do it.
So ready.
All right.
All right, so whiskey number two has been poured. Matt was just talking about the color.
Yeah, like, do you agree that it's a lot lighter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
I mean, maybe I'm just...
No, I mean, I can see it in the bottles from here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Number one looks, like, deeper, and number two looks... Mm-hmm. It's got, like, it's just, I don't know, lighter.
Oof.
Same general, like, color
what
tone?
What is that?
Oh, my gosh.
I'm going scotch.
You think it's scotch?
Yeah. Oh.
Oh, it's definitely scotch.
Yeah, I feel a scotch coming
on. I mean, the smell reminds me of scotch.
Oh, we have a lot of excitement going on here. Just at the sniff.
Oh, Chris, this might have your brine. Chris has been yearning for brine ever since I gave him Talisker.
That's right. Ever since the Talisker days.
Yearning for brine.
Is that like, is that a new band?
Band name, I call it. Been watching a lot of Parks and Rec.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, smelling this is a wildly different experience.
It is.
Than
yeah.
Now, Matt, you said just on the sniff level that you thought it was a scotch. So same question.
Yeah.
In terms of scotch, what do you mean by that? What do you think of when you think, oh, this is a scotch?
You're going to laugh. I think so much of it is just experience. It's not really having a very distinct palate.
Sure.
I think I haven't tasted it yet, but yeah. You know, the ability to discern the smells. I think it's just.
There's something kind of sharp, but also like deep raisin. Does that make any sense?
I smell raisin.
Yeah. And then maybe like a cooked blueberry or something.
Wow.
That's pretty
intense.
Those
are some sophisticated.
I don't know. I'm like, I desperately want to put words to what I'm smelling.
So I totally agree with the raisin because there's definitely like a fruitiness, but it's not like a super sweet fruitiness. It's more of like a kind of subtle, interesting fruitiness, like a date or a raisin or something like that.
Did you taste it, Matt?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think it's scotch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
that inevitable. That ineffable.
It's got that like. And bites you kind of in the back of your throat too.
Sweet.
It's not sweet, but it's like
that bite where it's like it grabs hold a little bit.
Yeah.
Ooh, interesting. All right, so I haven't sipped, but
we stare at Chris. We watch intently. He has tasted.
Whoa. There's so many things running through my head right now. Okay, so. So this is again unflattering, which you know, right. It can't always be flattering, but it feels like I'm talking mostly about mouthfeel, but also about flavor a little bit. It tastes a little bit like someone took the first one and just added water to it.
Oh,
right. And it's just like a little bit thinner. It has a little bit less, it coats your mouth a little bit less.
I would say I don't agree.
Okay, great.
I feel like I'm still tasting it. Ooh. Like it's like still happening. Whereas the first one came and gone. It's like, I don't even remember the first one.
Interesting.
This one that's got sweet. It's got, I mean, it's not as sweet. It's got more depth. It's got more stuff going on.
Hmm. Yeah. I would, you know, if we're talking complexity, this feels way more complex.
Yeah. Yeah.
First. Then the deceiver.
The deceiver.
Which wants you to think it's complex.
Right, but it's not.
It's really quite simple.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. Now, when you say complex, does that have to do with kind of how long the flavors remain in your mouth? And then also kind of like how they develop over time? Is that what you're is that what you're referring to when you talk about complexity?
I was going to say it to me, complex is that I can't nail it down. Where like the first one, I was like, oh, this is sweet, green. And then when I tasted it, I was deceived. So it was just like one thing. And so it wasn't complex. Complex in this situation was like, there's that raisin and then there's like maybe some baking spices. And it's just kind of like all jumbled together in a way that I can't really, because my experience isn't high. Like I don't have a ton of experience. So I can't pinpoint what it is. So maybe it's also lack of experience. That is why I'm calling it complex.
And I feel like it kind of moves. Like you feel it first. I don't know where you guys felt it, but I tasted it like in the middle of my tongue first.
Yeah.
And it kind of like moved to the back of my throat.
Oh, I love that.
The whole, and I feel like it just kind of, it's really good.
So I was
like
it's a slow.
Yeah.
It's like a slow moving.
I've mentioned this several times before, but I was a barista at Starbucks. Ooh. And one of the things they talk about when they're like, taste this coffee, which I kind of think all Starbucks coffee tastes the same, but
it does.
When they're like, taste this coffee, one of the things they say is like, where does it hit your tongue? Mm. And that's very interesting to me that like you can create a liquid that would hit your tongue in a different place than another liquid will.
Yeah.
Just by the virtue of how it's made.
Yeah. So Matt, you turned 21 in England.
Mm. I did.
How long were you in England?
2 years. So I moved there when I was... Wow. September of 99.
Oh, wow.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Dating myself here. And I moved back.
So old.
I moved back just after my... Is that right? No. I just lied to you.
Okay.
September of 2000 is when I moved there.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yep. And then I moved back in like end of April, early May of 2002.
Okay, so I've known you for a long time, and I didn't know this fact.
Okay.
Where were you on 9/11?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so I flew back. No joke. I flew back to the States, and 9/11 happened when I was in Michigan.
Wow.
So you were here.
Yeah. So I flew like a week after 9/11.
Oh, wow.
Flew back to London, and it was... crazy. I mean, the airports were empty.
Yeah.
Like no one, like people were too afraid to fly.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
And, but I needed to go back cause I had a job there. So it was,
wow.
And then that was when like security was changed and so everything just changed. Yeah. I don't think we had TSA then.
You know that, right. I think that came later.
Yeah. But yeah, so it was,
sorry. I didn't mean to bring it down. No, it's okay. I just was like, I never thought about that. Like if you, where you were, cause like everyone remembers, you know, right.
I was in Michigan.
So that's so interesting. So you're in England to work. You come back, I assume, to visit family.
It's complicated too, the way my visa worked. I had to come, like I couldn't stay there.
Oh,
for,
sure. Yeah.
I had like 6 months at a time. And So I came back, see family. Back,
9/11 happens. And then you have to figure out a way to get back to England for your work.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And so what were you doing in England?
It was a nonprofit. It was faith-based nonprofit, working with youth and working with disenfranchised people. Wow. That's not what I meant to say. I meant to say disadvantaged youth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So young, like low-income families and things like that. So we did a lot of, work with low-income families and helping with young people.
Did your experience in London town, England town, did it shape your alcohol experience? Like, would you say?
For sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How so?
Well, I am someone, I probably grew up similar to the two of you. I grew up in the church.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So alcohol, there was not a lot of alcohol in our house.
Right.
Growing up. Mm-hmm. My parents drank, but not very much.
Yeah.
And it was kind of frowned upon. And then when you go to England in the church, everybody drinks.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Everybody.
Can confirm.
Yes.
Yeah.
So like every party at the church had lots of alcohol.
Yeah.
Pastors, everyone drinks a lot of alcohol. So it was a bit of a challenge for me at first. I'm like, oh, this is weird. This is not what I'm used to. But So, but then it kind of made it okay, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
so
totally. Like,
okay, well, I'm going to drink too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, my working hypothesis that's based in no research whatsoever is that it has something to do with the sacrament.
Yeah.
How alcoholic your sacrament is, right? Sure. So like, yeah. If your sacrament has alcohol, then it's like, oh, well, you know, yeah. We're drinking every Sunday, so it's fine. If it doesn't, then you're more inclined to.
Yeah, yeah.
So my best friend works at a Catholic production company. And one of my best friends works at a Catholic, film production company.
Okay.
And my mom teaches at a Catholic school.
Okay.
And both of them have had the same experience, which is at every little event, mixer, get together, there are just mountains of alcohol. So yeah. it's just kind of part of the culture.
It is.
Now, so did your parents, did they have kind of a philosophy? You said they drank a little bit, but not a ton. Did they have any sort of philosophy on alcohol? Because I've shared the story before that, like, I was kind of a weird kid insofar as like my parents would tell me not to do a thing. And then I wouldn't even question it. I would just be like, oh yeah, that sounds reasonable. Like, I'm out. You guys are pretty smart. Like, it seems fine. So, I didn't drink. Yeah. None of the things you're not supposed to do growing up in that culture. Did your parents have any sort of philosophy on that at all?
I mean, sadly, both of their parents were recovering alcoholics. So, I think that part of it was just the running the opposite direction of like, sure. You don't want to have anything to do with that.
Sure.
But both of my parents now are. You know, especially that we're older, me and my brother, who you may be meeting at some point in the future.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. They're much more tolerant and more like they imbibe quite regularly. Not responsibly for sure, but it's not as big of a deal. Yeah. So
I discovered my parents like to go to wineries.
Hmm.
And I'm like, how does this work? You guys don't like wine, but they've discovered wineries that really have really sweet wine they like that. Mm-hmm. And I think they've had other, you know, not so sweet wine as well and enjoyed some of it. But I was just like, kind of a like, oh, is this what happens when you're retired? Like, you now go to wineries?
That's really interesting. Do you feel like, so my dad drinks more than my mom, but my mom doesn't drink that often. But if she does drink, she drinks very, very sweet wine. Mm. I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Here's my hypothesis.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
If you don't drink regularly, does your palate kind of stay in that sweet, like you only like sweeter things?
Makes a lot of sense.
Totally does.
Because you don't want to taste alcohol, really.
Sure.
Like you just want the feeling.
Yep. Right.
And you just want to like enjoy.
Yeah. So my main experience that I'm drawing from here is with beer. So I have no idea what my first beer was, but it was definitely ice cold. And there was something about it I immediately liked, but I'm pretty sure it was light.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm pretty sure if somebody had just like plopped down like an IPA, like a double IPA in front of me, I would have been like, whoa, what is going? Yeah. So like, I think there's definitely something to that. It's like an acquired taste. And once you've had kind of like, you know, the thing that's kind of like the mainline thing.
Yeah.
You're like, all right, I've had that. And then you're like, I'm going to try something that tastes a little bit different than that.
Yeah.
And then eventually you're drinking like sours and stuff. And, you know, to get like a new experience, basically. Yeah.
Well, it's also interesting, like, what can you do with so little ingredients? Mm-hmm. Like, whiskey's the same way. It's, like, essentially, like, three or four ingredients.
Right.
And time.
Yeah.
And you can get, like, two completely different tasting things.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's also just kind of, for me, it's, like, a fascination. Like, how is this possible?
It's
like,
amazing.
To have, like, either corn or barley and, or maybe wheat and, you know, but, and then water and time and heat. That's really it is.
Weather.
Yeah. And so weather affects it. All these different temperatures of the barrels and all that kind of stuff. To have such completely different things, that's what I get excited about.
Yeah.
That's like, ooh, how does this thing exist? Like, we haven't yet hit like a super smoky whiskey, but that's also right. part of it too, where it's like, how can you have a liquid, like you were saying with coffee, mm-hmm. how can you have a liquid that tastes like smoke? Mm. Like, that's just bizarre.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, for me, this one, number two, I don't, we have to name it.
Yeah.
It's really complex. I think it's really got something going mm. on. That's,
all right.
You got a name?
You got a name. He's got an idea. He's got one.
I don't have a name. Okay. I've been thinking a lot about this whole, I think it's a bourbon, I think it's a scotch thing.
Okay.
Okay. And here's what I want to posit. You tell me if I'm barking up the right tree or not.
Okay.
So the, I think it's a bourbon thing, broadly speaking, is it kind of like, this is like sucking on a caramel. Like, it's not, it, there's not a lot to it, but there doesn't need to be, because it's sweet and it's pleasant and it's enjoyable. Right. Versus this is a scotch, which is like, this is not like sucking on a caramel. It's a little bit more subtle. Mm. I still feel like it's a little bit more subtle, which mm. is maybe where I was heading with like the non-complex thing.
Yeah.
But because it's more subtle, you can kind of move past the like, whoa, sweet caramel thing, and like kind of discern that there's like a few different kind of strands going on. I don't know if you guys like talking about sophistication at all, when it comes to like whiskey or scotch or bourbon, but like I imagine some like sophisticated whiskey drinker tasting the first one and being like, yeah, it's whiskey, or even like, yeah, it's bourbon,
yeah,
tasting the second one and kind of like maybe enjoying it a little bit more and being a little bit more intrigued by it, because there's a little bit more for them to think about and like unpack.
I would agree and then heartily disagree.
Okay.
So like, I agree in like simple concepts, you're not wrong. Mm. Which is to say, you're wrong. But I think it's also what you've tasted and what you've been tasting.
Yeah.
I think a lot of bourbons are complex and do have a lot going on.
Yeah.
You know, see Whistlepig from episode one.
Oh, right.
Which is a rye. Absolutely. Which completely befuddled us. Like, we didn't know what we were getting into. And it was,
we thought it tasted like a, that's the one we thought tasted like a, the butter flavor of Jelly Belly, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. And it was just like throwing us for a loop, and we just didn't know what was going on. Right. And it was like, but I think that's, someone who's really good at making rise and someone, you know, in a company that does that really well, and they do really interesting things like that was aged in like Madeira casks and all this other stuff. Mm. So I think you can get really interesting bourbons that are subtle.
Sure.
I just think number one is a young, my guess is it's young. And so it's not like, to use your word, sophisticated.
Yeah.
It doesn't have, hasn't had that time to like mature.
Right.
Yeah. I think what's interesting too is, and I feel like this is right. I think I learned this from my brother, but like all bourbon, if it's going to be classified as bourbon, has to be made in new oak barrels.
Yes.
And then all those barrels get shipped over to Scotland and Ireland where they store it. So it's,
right.
So if you think about it, there's actually something very telling about that, where everything that we have is new. Everything that they're getting has like all this flavor already kind of soaked in there.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. And so it's, I agree with you. There's not, not every bourbon is simple and every scotch is complex, but scotch is definitely starting off with something a little bit more interesting, in my opinion.
Well, and it's also the original mash, like bourbon has to be 51% corn to be called a bourbon. So it's going to have that corniness to it.
So corny.
I'm snapping with, that's how I'm clapping right now. That's how good that joke was.
And the scotch, because it's in used barrels, and because the mash bills are different, it's barley. Like, I just think your source material is different, so you're gonna get that like different tastes.
So interesting.
Yeah.
Yes to the brine, by the way, although it's not the briniest I think I've had, but yes. And I think I'm still trying to figure out what I mean when I say that, but I think of like salt water, not to put too fine a, too fine a point on it. Yeah. Like something about like olives or like pickles and that sort of thing, which didn't even occur to me was a thing you could taste.
You just tasted that just now?
Yeah. Well, just like kind of in the back. Like I said, it's not going to like smack you in the face with it, but yeah, there's something that's like, yeah, whatever that briny thing is, that's kind of hard to describe, is like, something, it's not sweet. It's not sour. It's not bitter. Mm-hmm. It's something kind of approaching bitter.
I did a tasting with Scotch once where we did oysters. Mm-hmm. Were you with me for that one?
No, not for oysters.
It was at $7,000.
Okay.
And you shot the oyster, but they tried to get you to leave some of the brine in there, and then you actually they poured some of the Scotch in there, and you took the shot of Scotch out of the oyster shell.
So that's crazy.
It's not crazy that you're tasting brine. I feel like it's over the brine.
Oh,
yes.
Okay, so number two is called Over the Brine.
Yes.
Done and
I was
done.
Just going to ask our name, but it just happens.
I've already forgotten the name of number one. I'm sorry.
Deceiver.
It's The Deceiver.
Oh, yeah. How could I forget? Okay.
It is your screenplay.
The Deceiver and Over the Brine.
Yeah.
Wow, I feel like we have such compelling names this time.
This time we're like getting the names.
We're nailing them for sure.
All right, you guys ready for another one?
I'm so ready. Whiskey number three. Okay, so the third whiskey has been poured. Let's talk about color first off, because we have them right next to each other. This one lighter also than the first one. What do you think about two versus three color-wise?
Actually, I think three is darker.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Is three darker?
They're pretty close, right?
We're all agreeing that, at least in the glass, one was the darkest.
Yeah, I think one was the darkest.
Right now, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, it is.
It should also be mentioned here, perhaps, that like the psychological motivation to declare the third whiskey you have the best or like the most enjoyable or the most interesting or the most something is quite strong, right? Yeah.
It is.
So we're always working against that.
I don't think it's a Scotch. How about that?
That's good.
That's as far as
what about a bourbon? Do you think it's a bourbon?
My Chris impression. So what do you, when you say,
when you say it's a whiskey.
This one is perplexing in the nose, at least.
Oh, yeah, it really is.
I feel like it's very subtle.
Yeah.
There's not.
Yeah. Like at first I was like, oh, it's a bourbon. And then on second and third smelling, I'm like,
it could be Irish.
Could be. Yeah.
Ooh, it smells like the Irish.
Watch this be wrong on every single one.
Yeah, I hope so.
Me too. I love that. I mean, I also loved last week when Jack just totally like Sherlock Holmes'd the three whiskeys. But
I
love
all three of them.
I thought the first one was Wild Turkey, but it was Redbreast.
Oh,
I was thinking it was like Rare Breed, one of the better Wild Turkeys.
At least it was in the Bird family.
Well,
and but he called the Bushmills.
Yeah, I got the Bushmills.
Yeah.
So you last called week,
Bushmills. You said it was Bushmills.
Yeah.
He said the first one was the regular Bushmills, and you said Black Bush as well, right? Yeah. Because Black Bush is one that you particularly enjoy.
Well, that's because I knew it existed.
Yeah,
and I also kind of had an idea of how things were getting picked.
So this is really weird. Like I'm sometimes, well, often at a complete loss for words. Like there's something a little strange about this one. It's not the brininess. There's something that kind of, at least on the smell, like goes kind of sideways and underneath the traditional like whiskey smell. There's something
sideways.
Something sideways and underneath that traditional like kind of caramely thing.
Yeah.
What do you think?
It's got a little heat.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, like jalapeno? Like spice?
No.
No, it's I think there's some
alcohol.
Oh, high alcohol. Here, yeah. Okay. Highest alcohol content of the three we've had thus far, do you think?
Maybe.
I mean, yeah, I'm guessing.
I'm guessing that as well. But it definitely packs a punch.
This one is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because on like first sip, it was really sweet. On the second sip, it was like, oh, something else going on here. And I don't quite know what it is.
Wow. Yeah.
What do you think?
I'm just going to throw it right out. What do you think about strawberry?
Yeah. I can get behind strawberry.
I think the weird, I don't know if it's strawberry or not, but I think the weird thing, the reason this is interesting compared to Deceiver is because I feel like this one does not deceive you.
Yeah. Mm-mm.
Like, I feel like that same thing I was picking up, I was like, kind of, what's that weird, like, kind of underneath the caramely thing? What's that weird, kind of tangy thing that's going on the nose?
Is it a rye? Sorry.
Oh.
I think you might be onto something.
I'm really censoring myself right now, guys. When you say rye. Well, so Jack has mentioned before, ryes tend to be spicier.
Yeah, a little bit more spice. A little bit more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Like grab a hold of you and pay attention.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, you get like a maker's rye or something. It's like sweeter. This isn't that. I'm not saying that this is that. This could be a rye. It has.
There's a lot going on. I feel like
this is a bourbon. Whiskey. This disproves your point of earlier. Which is like,
sure, yeah. This, I would agree.
I'm not saying it is. I have no idea what it is. But if it is, it really kind of undercuts that.
Absolutely, because it does have a lot going on for sure. Punches you in the mouth, kind of similar to the first one, but is as complex as the second. I would say.
I don't know why I'm obsessed with the colors, like light and dark, whereas the first one felt light, like I called it like new green. Mm. This one to me feels like dark purple.
Mm.
Wow. I love the color thing. So this is so interesting, right? Because like I was talking about heat earlier, there's like colors going on. We're talking about like textures and different fruits and things. It's crazy that just like this little, you know, half ounce of liquid is like causing all these extrapolations to appear in our minds.
There's something going on. I can't put my finger on it, but
do you like it?
I really like this.
Yeah, it's cool. Nice.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. I like it too.
I don't know.
You said, does everyone say that the last one is their favorite?
So far,
I mean, there's a strong. It's the reason why the third thing you say in a comedy is always the thing that's funny, right?
Yeah.
Like,
there's
a reason a screenplay has three acts. Like, there's just something about three that causes the emphasis of the trio to be put on the last third, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean this isn't the most interesting, the most fun to drink out of the three, you know?
And it could be a way that they're being designed as well, like, I think there's some thought being put into the order.
Of course.
Oh, you told me, can we talk about that now?
Oh, yeah. So my friend Billy, I told him, hey, I'm thinking about doing a podcast. I want to, you know, do blind drinks. And he just got so excited.
Yeah.
He was just like, I was like, do you want to like help? And he's like, yes, I do. So he's been designing all of these for us. And so like last week was a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush.
Ah.
So it was Redbreast and two Bushmills, and they were the same price. So $60 for the Redbreast versus a 20 and a 40 Bushmills.
Ooh.
So he's really put a lot of thought into it. So yeah, I also think he's thinking about like the order, you know?
Sure.
So is there a theme for tonight?
We will find out. I don't know. Do you guys have any inklings? Like,
if all goes according to plan, there will be a theme for tonight. You're the Sherlock Holmes of whiskey, man. I don't know.
I mean, so I think the only deduction I have thus far is based upon the story of my wife trying to figure out the one bottle.
Mm.
She said one of the bottles was really weird.
Okay.
Which, for whatever reason, I think that means it was Crown Royal.
It was a Rube Goldberg device to get into the bottle.
No, I mean, the more I think about it, I don't think so. But
well, for sure,
Blanton's has a weird bottle.
Oh yeah, Blanton's does have a weird bottle. But I wouldn't pick any. Well, maybe number three.
That's what I was gonna say. I don't think
number three is Blanton's.
Sorry, what were you gonna say, Chris?
I don't know Blanton's from Blanton's, but one thing that's definitely come up that we might as well double down on because there's literally nothing riding on this is that for sure number one is a bourbon, right?
Yeah, I think it
for
is.
Sure, I really believe it is. I do.
For sure, number two is a scotch.
I'm more confident that number two is a scotch than I am the number one is a bourbon.
Yeah.
And for sure, number three is a rye.
I would say I'm like 40% on that being a rye.
Same here. I the only one I'm 100%, well, no, in the 80 to 90% confidence range is number two being a scotch.
Being a scotch. Interesting.
Yeah.
So my only frame of reference when we talk about rye, other than having had, you know, the bullet rye in the past,
yeah,
is rye bread. Mm. When I think about rye bread, I think about things that are kind of bitter, but in sort of an appealing way. And I don't know if that translates to rye whiskey at all.
I think that actually could be a great distillation, no pun intended, of the taste of rye. Because it's like bitter but sweet.
Yeah.
It's like... It gets in there and it's kind of grabs you, but it's also kind of keeps you coming back.
Yeah.
There's something that kind of interrupts you about I don't know about rye in general, but the taste of this, there's something kind of disruptive about it. It's like, ooh, whiskey, and then, oh, what's that? Huh? and then you're kind of back to whiskey, right? There's something that's kind of a little bit jarring and a little bit off-putting about it, but in a super... you know, pleasing way, I would say.
Interesting.
I do think this is American.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Yeah, I would agree that it's American.
Cool.
I'm trying to go back to number two and think about like, okay, if it is a scotch, what part of Scotland is it?
Oh, interesting.
So I'm like trying to figure out, would it be...
So can I...
Well, it's
can
not
I...
Macallan.
No.
We know that it's. I feel like it's like a something that I don't drink that often.
Okay, or
I feel like it's a little bit rarer, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
So Jack and I recorded the very first time we ever recorded together was the Zero episode.
I actually heard a little bit snippet of it.
Oh, great! Yeah. So that one you are in good company because we will never release that one. however. Jack talked a little bit then about the different regions of Scotland that Scotch can come from. And I feel like now would be a great time.
To reiterate?
Do it.
So there's Island Scotches or Isla Scotches, which generally have that briny.
Yeah.
The way that they malt their barley is with peat smoke because peat is more abundant than wood. So everyone always talks about Isla Scotches being very peaty. That's what they mean. It's like kind of smoky and earthy. Mm-hmm. You've got Speysides, which is the most common and it's the most abundant in the market. That's your, you know, if you go to Trader Joe's and get their like, you know, 18-year-old scotch, that's Trader Joe's branded. That's a Speyside. Mm-hmm. It's usually light. People say it's light and fruity. It's very accessible. It's easy to drink. Mm-hmm. Then you've got your Highland Scotches, which is on episode zero, we drank Glenmorangie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of got a little bit more character than Speyside. It's got a little bit more underneath sort of punch. And then you've got Campbelltown whiskeys, which essentially is really only Springbank. Mm. Like there's a couple, I think there's maybe one or two other Campbelltown distillers, but I'm not even sure that they exist anymore. And then there's like Lowland Scotches, which... I think there's only like one Auchentoshan.
Oh yeah.
Which is a lowland.
Yeah.
Which tastes a lot like bourbon. People often say if you want an introduction into scotch, get Auchentoshan triple wood.
Huh.
which is they have Akintosh and they've aged in three different kinds of wood. And people often say, if you like bourbon, you'll like that.
All so right. if you had to, that second one, where do you think it's from?
This, I don't know. It tastes most like a Highland to me.
Yeah. It wasn't super, it wasn't peaty to me.
No, it wasn't peaty but it wasn't like light.
Yeah.
So it's either a blended scotch, which means it could be any combination of those
four
or five.
Right.
Or I think it's a Highland. I'm going to put my money on a Highland, but.
Okay. Great.
You guys want to find out what we drank?
In a second. I want to make my predictions.
Oh,
yes.
Good.
Let's hear it.
So I'm going to stick with number one being a cheaper bourbon.
Okay.
I'm not educated enough or have a palate refined enough to name it.
Yeah.
I think it's a cheaper bourbon. Number two, I'm going to go with a Highland scotch.
Okay.
I don't think it was, you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb. Single malt.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Wow.
Cool.
And why? Can you say why?
It felt like there was, it didn't feel like the best way I can describe it for me is that it felt like, it tasted like a, it's unified. Mm. Like yeah. it was just like a consistency to it. Didn't feel like I was drinking a bunch of different things. I'm going to say rye on the third one.
All right.
Okay.
I'm sticking with rye.
All right. We got to name number three before we make the call.
And the name has to be as good as the other two.
We have to live up to our names.
How about Rhinot?
Rhinot. Oh, Matt is good at this.
We, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you listening to podcast number 103 of Three Blind Drinks, this was the episode where we opened the Pandora's box of rye puns that ran rampant.
I kind of like this deceiver over the brine and
Rhinot.
Rhinot. I love it. All right. Should we discover?
Let's find out.
What we've just had.
All right.
Let's
one more try.
Let's try Billy.
And then we're just gonna break down the walls of paper.
Jericho.
Billy's last stand. Here it goes.
Billy the Kid. Billy Elliot. And keep going.
Just keep going. Yeah.
This is great radio right here. So much tension.
Mm. Oh, it's too bad. You should do something on this episode where it's like, you should build tension around this phone call. You should. I think it'd be really funny.
Please leave your message.
Right. Bleep up.
All right, we're going to leave a message for Billy because he is not answering his phone. So, Billy, number one, we have decided to call...
The Deceiver.
Because, do you want to say why?
Because we felt like it smelled nothing like it tasted.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, we have decided to call Over the Brine because we love puns. And
thought it was briny.
Number three, we decided to call... Rhinot. I think that one's pretty self-explanatory. Billy. All right. Well, call me. All right. Bye, Billy. Thanks for all your help.
Thanks, love Billy. You.
Thanks, Billy.
All right. Cool.
All right. So here we go.
Because Billy didn't answer, we're going to have to do this ourselves.
Jack, do you want to do the honors?
I think Jack should definitely do the honors.
Handing Jack the bag full of blinded whiskeys.
So I just want to offer something too. Like, should we taste this whiskey together that I have that I shouldn't have opened?
If you want.
We can talk about it.
I mean, the answer is always yes.
Yes. All right.
From me. So,
does it say?
No, I don't know what's what. I mean, I could call Erica. She probably remembers what is what.
But here's an interesting thing.
Can we tell?
Let's not, and let's... I won't be any help to you guys, but I would be really interesting to know if Jack Mottman and Matt Ford can discern which whiskey is in which bottle.
Okay. So this bag is Buchanan's Select blended scotch, blended malt scotch whiskey.
That was blended.
It's blended. Well, blended malt. Yeah. Buchanan Select is composed of some of the finest single malt whiskies selected from the heart of Scotland.
Oh.
Aged 15 years. So, oh, and this is the one that she, this is the weird one. Look at the top.
Oh, that is weird.
Oh, so it's got kind of like a,
is like got its own.
That's the scotch.
That's the scotch. Smell
it. It's got kind of a weird, like when you open a soy sauce bottle
and
it has like that little thing that like kind of interrupts the flow. It's got one of those on the top.
I don't know why that's there.
And indeed, that's absolutely, number two. It's number two. And that, may I just say, guys, is really impressive. It is a blend. However,
I was wrong. I said single malt.
However, it's a blend of single malts, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, I call that a win. Way to go, guys. 15 years on that one.
So that's a 15-year-old scotch that we think is number two.
The brine, for sure.
Over the brine.
You can smell it.
All right, so this one is like a squarish bottle.
Angel's Envy?
Is...
Nope.
Uncle Nearest.
What?
The smoothest whiskey in Tennessee.
Number one.
This has got to be number one, right?
Yes.
Why?
Distilled in small batches, handmade in Tennessee, maple charcoal filtered.
Wow.
100 proof.
I think it's number one.
I think this is...
Now, why? Why do you say that?
I don't know. I can't tell. I took a big smell and lost all my confidence.
No, this is number three.
Is it?
Yeah. I think this is number three.
Chris, take a smell.
I think it is. Number one had like, it was like super.
Yeah.
I think it is too. I didn't say this while we were sniffing number three and tasting number three, but there was something like apple or something like that that was like kind of a subtle, not like a whiz bang tangy kind of fruit flavor, but like a more subtle, softer fruit flavor, apple-y type thing. And that's what that's the main thing I'm getting from sniffing the actual bottle.
All right.
I would also say it's probably number three.
So number one, well, we're pulling out the last one. Breckenridge, high proof blend, a blend of straight bourbons.
There you go. Wow.
So maybe this one.
Guys, that's impressive.
Maybe this one is number one. I think it is.
I mean, you can back it up with if you want to sniff the blinded bottle.
I think this is number one.
I think you're right.
Smell it. I don't know. I don't know.
I think it is. I mean, we could probably.
Just from by virtue of you guys saying that you thought it was a bourbon.
This is a bourbon. Well, this is. What is this? Technically, I wonder if it's a Tennessee whiskey.
It's a Tennessee whiskey.
Never heard of.
Breckenridge is from Colorado, but I think this is a Colorado bourbon.
So what do we think about...
It's a blend of straight bourbon whiskeys, though.
Oh, yeah. Like I read earlier.
I'm an idiot.
Whiskey with snow melt from the Rocky Mountains. A blend of bourbon whiskeys aged for a minimum of 2 years in charred oak barrels.
So this would be number one, what we were calling...
It's high proof. It's 105.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Lot of alcohol.
How do you figure it out again? I forget.
Divided by two.
Yeah. Okay. So
52.5%.
It's pretty high.
Yes.
It's big.
All right. So I'm going to pour some of this just to try to figure out what it is.
Okay. So number one, the one we were calling the Deceiver, we are saying is the Breckenridge, correct?
That's our guess. Absolutely.
Wow.
There's no question that's number
crazy.
One.
Yeah. That's crazy. Which kind of makes sense, right? Because it's a blend of bourbons, correct? So it kind of makes sense that if you have a blend of bourbons, there might be one with like a stronger smell, right? One that has a stronger smell and not as strong a taste mixed with another bourbon that has maybe a weaker smell and a stronger taste. And maybe that accounts for some of like the discrepancy.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a pretty good theory.
There's a hypothesis.
I think the alcohol, the high alcohol content is probably why it also tastes so much different than it smells.
Yeah, and because you were getting so much of it on the nose.
Yeah.
It was just like super strong.
Yeah.
So here comes the infinity bottle.
So the infinity bottle is a little bit of everything we've had on the show.
Okay.
So it's got some Glenmorangie. It's got some Whistlepig Old World.
Correct.
It's got some of the third whiskey from last time, which I think was Black Bush from Bushmills.
That's correct. Yes.
And we're going to give Matt a little taste of it, and he's going to tell us
what should be added.
What we should add to this guy.
What should we add to the infinity bottle?
Whoa.
I'm going to smell it for reference.
That's intense. I'm getting scotch. I'm getting a little bit of bourbon.
Yeah. Now that he knows what's in it, Matt is an expert. All right. I'm just going to revisit the smell.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is.
I will say I did not smell anything quite like this tonight thus far.
No. Well, if we want to get creative, I think we should not do the scotch.
Okay.
Because I'm getting a lot of the scotch cutting through.
Okay.
Got it.
So we got to kind of balance it out.
Which would be the Glenmorangie, correct?
Right.
So I think we should put number three in there.
Yeah.
Is Rye Knot because.
Rye Knot.
Really, the reason we said Rye Knot is because we were unsure as to whether or not it was rye.
Right. It was. That's why it was the perfect name. Yeah. I mean, if we're going to explain the joke, the best part of that name is that it's non-committal.
Yeah. Exactly.
We're now changing the name to Not Rye.
Exactly.
Right. So I'm adding some.
So Jack is very scientifically.
Yes.
Probably too much.
It's okay.
Maybe doubled the amount with some Rye Knot, aka what is the actual name of Rye Knot again?
Uncle Nearest. So we've got Uncle Nearest, Breckenridge High Proof Blend.
Oh, we gotta think. Yeah, what do you think the whole
Buchanan Select? Does anyone see a through line?
They're all blended.
Aha! That's right? Probably it.
They're all blended.
I think they are.
Is that what the...
Is there some like play on words, though, that...
Uncle Nearest, 1856.
Mm.
Maybe they all reference... I don't know. Chris, why don't you take a little bit of the new infinity bottle?
Yeah, of course.
Let's see if I can pull this back in here.
A little bit of the infinity. Just a splash. What have we done, guys? What do you think?
You're the one tasting it.
Oh, am I the only one?
Yeah. I'm going to pass.
Matt's got the original.
Got the old, the OG.
I'm still getting a little bit of the Glenmorangie. I think it's still a little scotch forward. Listen to me. Well, I'd be really interested to know what you guys think, but I still really like it. Like, I'm not sure. I think we would have to add something really strong to wreck this. You know, like it still feels really smooth to me. Obviously it's a blend, but it's not like the type of blend. It's not like the first one we had. It's not like, the Deceiver where it's the type of blend where it's difficult to figure out what's going on. Like it feels cohesive still to me.
Hmm.
What do you think, Jack?
I think we might've broken it. I'm not sure that it's better after adding.
Well, it's bad.
It's just changed a lot, and maybe that's what I'm reacting to, is that it doesn't taste like last time.
Sure.
But can I taste this a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely changed, and I like the journey.
There you go.
It's not the destination, Jack.
That's true.
It's the journey, Matt.
it's the flavor of our podcast.
Yes.
All right, let's end this nightmare.
All right. Thus far, Jack and I have been the ones to supply the whiskey. But Matt has some rye.
Is it rye?
Yeah.
That he wants to cap things off with. So, Matt, tell us the story of this rye.
Yeah, I wish I had a really, really amazing story. But it's a very, very rare bottle that was not supposed to be opened. However, and this is the truth, I don't know who opened it at my house. Really? We had some people over probably about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And because everything is sitting at the bar, that we have a little bar cart over here, I think it just got opened. I didn't notice it.
Yeah.
My brother told me, he's like, this is a gift. Let's open it on a special occasion.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
So by the time it was open, I was just like, you know what? Let's just drink it. Who cares? So my brother called me about 2 weeks ago. He said, do you still have that Thomas Handy Sazerac rye? Mm-hmm. He's like, I might want it back.
Ooh. Are you serious?
Yeah. Because I was like, I said, it's actually been opened. And the text that I got back was just a lot of exclamation points and frowny faces.
Oh, no.
Well, apparently the bottle is worth several $1,000s. It's very, very rare.
Oh, my gosh.
My brother bought it for $170.
Oh.
It's called the Thomas H. Handy Sazerac Straight Rye Whiskey. Uncut, unfiltered, 64.3%. It's 128.6 proof.
Wow.
Apparently there's not a lot of these. So let's try it together. I mean, there's only like, you guys are looking.
Yeah, there's only like a couple fingers left.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, what a princely gift. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to
rinse out my glass.
I kind of don't want to taint it with whatever remnants we have in the glass. So sure.
Sure. Will you do mine as well?
So now do you think, well, clearly not the, whoever this mystery guest was that
they had no clue. It was totally innocent. I mean,
yeah, they had no clue what they were drinking.
Let's just put it this way. I'm not inviting whiskey connoisseurs over to my house.
Right. Yeah.
This was like a small get together. And more than likely they just saw the bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Popped it open.
Which, I mean, it's a great bottle.
Yeah.
I love it. It's very simple. It just basically has the words on the front of the bottle kind of engraved into the glass. There's like a little engraving of what I would imagine is the distillery marked into the bottle on the front. But other than that, kind of an unassuming, just kind of classy looking bottle of rye whiskey.
Yeah. It's Thomas Handy was apparently born in Maryland in 1830.
There you go. Okay.
I'm trying to read the back of the bottle as we're doing this.
Now, your brother, who is a connoisseur of whiskey,
correct.
Also knew that this was a good bottle.
Yes.
But maybe didn't know it was as rare as it is, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
I don't think he knew that it was as rare as it is.
Okay.
But it's not so rare anymore. And ladies and gentlemen, we have an interruption here.
Okay,
phone
so
call.
Pause.
Billy.
Billy, is that you?
Yes.
Yay.
Are you dead?
No, I'm not dead.
Yay.
I totally forgot to take my phone off of silent.
Aw.
Because it always goes to silent at night, and I changed it so it doesn't do it on Thursday.
All right, so
I take it from your good cheer that I didn't totally ruin everything.
Oh no, we're great.
Not at all. Far from it.
So okay. We unpackaged the bottles, so we know what you did. But we don't know the theme. So
you had all that time and you couldn't put together the theme?
Well, Matt is our guest. Matt thinks that they're all blended, but that's as far as we got.
Well, so I have to tell you the backstory, which is that I was really disappointed last week that you just crushed through all the hard work with my team and ruined my reveal entirely.
Yeah.
So I came at this one with a little bit of a vengeance.
So I picked the blended Scotch Buchanan's as my favorite this week, mostly because I said it was just the thing I wanted to have today. It hit me right where I wanted to get it. Mm-hmm. Chris and Matt both like the third one the best, which was the Tennessee one, we believe. The Uncle Nearest.
Yeah.
Is that right?
And what did you think of that Breckenridge?
Was
hot, right? It was like 105
proof. Yeah. So, okay, did you hear the names? The names that we gave them, number one we called the Deceiver. Because it smells so amazing, and then all of a sudden, like, it just punches you in the face.
Yeah.
And then...
This is because you always talk about how much you love fire.
Yes, I do. I do.
So, again, just giving you exactly what you deserve.
And then we called number two Over the Brine. And then number three we called Rye Nut. Which turns out, you know, we were right, but we were wrong.
You got the knot part.
Yeah, exactly. So what's the theme?
I can't believe you didn't get this. It's the 1856 Democratic ticket of James Buchanan and John C. Breckinridge.
All right, well, f*** you.
Of course.
Oh, 1856, Uncle Nearest, John C. Breckinridge, and James Buchanan. Wow.
That's a great theme. I mean, that is a great theme.
That's amazing.
The Sherlock Holmes Moriarty battle between Jack and Billy stands at 1-1.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing.
That's excellent. I love it. The funny thing is, Jack, didn't you read the date at one point? You were like, 1856.
Yeah, I did.
But of course, that's no help.
Yeah, you didn't have that U.S. history.
Oh, that's incredible.
That's great. Excellent.
Well, thank you so much.
Yes.
And, thanks, Billy.
Apologies again for the delay.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you again soon.
All right.
All right, bye-bye.